Welcome to the Hackberry House of Chosun. My name is Bob. I'm reading today from A Greater Than Solomon, a report I've put together about some of the alleged abuse that's going on in some Christian families and homes, ministry-type homes, throughout the nation. Today I want to talk a minute about North Korea. In my early 40s, not the 1940s, but my 40s, I began hearing the painful cries of the persecuted church. I should have heard it a long time before that, but I didn't until then. And in those days, I traveled to Bulgaria and Yugoslavia and Romania, in the days when communism ruled. My heart burned for those people of God that were willing to endure such suffering for Christ. Romania became a gut-jerking passion for me after that. I visited her four times. I advocated for her. I wrote pamphlets. I prayed and corresponded. And then suddenly Romania was free, and I felt free from that burden. Years later, in 2007, I became aware that there was an awful pain present in Mr. Kim's Korea. This was Kim Jong-il at the time. For 2 years, I followed that nation by blogging and collecting all those blogs into the largest book I've written today. It's available at Amazon.com, Hackberry. What's the name of it? The Hackberry. Anyway, yeah, it starts with Hackberry, Volume 1. I visited Korea with my Korean wife. You know, we worked with refugees that were arriving in the South after the arduous journey they took from the North via China and several Southeast Asia nations. You know, you don't come just from North Korea to South Korea across the border, and that's not allowed. So you've got to sneak around, but it takes weeks and months. Anyway, they told us their stories, concentration camps and torture and humiliation, re-education and forced compliance, brainwashing, daily and constant loudspeaker broadcasts, starvation. The elite were blessed, the rabble were cursed. Families separated. Whole families imprisoned because of one member's offense. Forced confessions and testimonials. Well, it had been a difficult year for me even before that trip and all of those difficulties. And then hearing those constant issues of North Korea, writing them down for the mission that I was representing. That was my job there. Eventually, it just exhausted my supply of adrenaline, nervous breakdown, secondhand trauma. And for months after my return, I could do little besides pray and listen to gospel music. I understand a little bit about stress that causes fear, that causes breakdown of the nervous system. Passion's a good thing, but too much passion will eat a person up. The situation is so wicked in North Korea. Only the strong should be approaching it. I'm not in that category, evidently. My website continues to feature photos and hundreds of audios, both in English and Korean, addressing Chosun. That's the old name for Korea. I don't plan another visit anytime soon. But what in the world does all that have to do with child abuse here? Well, it has to do in every way. It's like deja vu all over again. As they say, just tone it down a little bit. I'm not saying North Korea here in America, but you add Jesus to it and the Bible and church, and then read again, listen again maybe to those methods in North Korea. What was I saying? Yeah, you know, the elite blessed and humiliation and concentration camp, prison, forced compliance, families separated. Does that sound? I know that there are survivors, as they call themselves here in America, who are listening to me right now, saying, yeah, that's us. I get it. Yeah, I got it too. When you read those stories of the abused Christians in our country, young people, and then you look at that North Korea list, you'll see why I let out a wail of emotion when I encountered them. I've dealt with these things before. I recognize this thing. I know what's going on here. My heart is broken again. Again, I don't want to say that what they are experiencing is like North Korea, but it has some of those similarities. It's toned down quite a bit, but even that is unexcusable in so many, many ways. I've already had to back off of this. I was advised to get out of this thing altogether with the abuse in America because too much of this leads me to bad places, and I don't want to go back there again. I really don't. I'm talking about to the breakdown. But I can't get away from it totally. Maybe it's the aching of the little boy inside of me who came from an unhappy home. Maybe it's the grown man who's looked Romania and North Korea in the eye, and I've seen the evil there. I can't tell you why my heart beats more quickly for some teens who are now adults that I've never met, probably will never meet. All I know is I've seen this before. I've got to tell God's people about it. This isn't right, what I'm seeing. And I'm begging God's people to pray and act until something changes. The imprisoning of youth, please. The actual beating of babies by Christians, by pastors. Listen to this testimony. I rewrote it a bit for your consumption. I want to tell you the story, says this person. My dear mother passed on to me. I was born, and then, of course, and then at age two, I was in my mother's arms, disturbed about something. I was making a fuss during some sermon. 2 years old, a leading staff member in this home suddenly stood with a paddle in her hand and forced me and my mom into a room adjoining the area where they were all listening to the preacher. Soon they were listening to another sound. It was me screaming for my life as the woman's paddle struck me on my hind side. 2 years old. I screamed until I couldn't scream anymore. That's what Mom said. I finally ran out of breath. That's when the swats stopped. Victoriously, we emerged from the little room as the sermon went on without interruption. Except one interruption where another staff member who could hear the swats was cheering her on. And my mother wouldn't lie. This actually happened. That's one testimony. Speaking of moms, let me tell you some summaries of mom's confessions. Now, these are mothers of survivors of Christian ministry homes. And just as in the sharing of the children's accusations above or in the last segment, I've combined the words of various mothers as though they were just one mom who was concerned. Believe me, mom is very concerned. You will note that their grievances mirror those of their returned teens. And also, as with the teens, these comments are directly from documents easily searchable online. I'm not making any of this up. Here's some moms talking. Arrangements were made without my daughter's knowledge. We were under stress, were talked into it by a pastor. Calls and visits monitored. Prison-like atmosphere. Wish I had stood by my feelings and not sent her. Meals withheld for punishment. I was looked on as a sorry parent. Humiliation. Letters home were always positive. I was horrified to see how skeletal she appeared. Her arms were just sticks. I wonder if she'll ever truly be over her experience. She shows signs of PTSD 25 years later. I regret my daughter ever being there. The beatings were awful. Here's some staff members. Now, again, putting a bunch of staff members together as though they were one. And they're in random order, these statements, but every statement directly taken from the internet. All they teach is fear. Everything negative. Always cutting down everyone. I committed to 2 years, but I couldn't stay because of the abuses I saw. I was dumbfounded at what I saw. I cried for these girls when I read their testimonies later. The way things were operated reminded me of a Nazi concentration camp. There was a, quote, prison line for the bathroom. All mail was censored through the staff, even my mail, as a staff member. They ate rotten food, expired food, slimy food. There was humiliation, psychological tactics, bullying, abuse. I almost gave up on God after I left this place of horror. I know they ate dog food at times. There's a 10-foot privacy fence and locked gates. Even as a staff member, my phone calls were monitored. When I resigned, it was said of me that the devil got another one of the hearts of a staff member. Oh, okay, enough of that. Let's move on. The 17th century songwriter Isaac Watts paraphrased the 23rd Psalm in his creation, "My Shepherd Will Supply My Need." That was the name of his song, but it was based on the 23rd Psalm. The last verse goes like this: "Here in God's house would I find a settled rest while others go and come. No more a stranger nor a guest, but like a child at home." Like a child at home. Like a child. That just rings through me, like a child at home. What's it like? What's it supposed to be like to be a child at home? Is home a place of insecurity, constant fear, breaking rules? Is it the forever expectancy of the rod of the shepherd? Or is it a place where the still waters and the green pastures are? I know, I'm picturing heaven. David was talking about that. And Mr. Watts was too. But isn't home, a Christian home, supposed to be a little like heaven here? I'm just asking. Traveling from Azuba to Hephzibah. What do those two words mean? The prophet used these two words to describe Israel two different times. Azuba, unacceptable. Hephzibah, delightful. How does a person, say a teenage person, travel from the Azuba, hearing God say, "I don't want you. You're not acceptable. Get out of my sight," because of sin in our life? He has to do that. His own son was cut off from him. How does a person travel from that to, "I truly delight in you, Hephzibah. You are so pleasant to me. I accept you fully"? Well, that I can answer in one word. And the word is grace. Not reformation. Not trying hard. But God's grace, written on the heart of parent and child. God's very law, in fact, written on the heart. The breathing of God's Spirit on a human being. Do I make it too easy? Yeah, because not everyone goes after the grace of God. I wonder how many of the students in Christian's home, or your home, already have tasted of that grace, but are struggling with growing up with the sanctification that the Spirit provides. Some are headed Godward, perhaps, and are turned off temporarily or permanently toward the things of heaven if that Christian home isn't being a Christian home and was supposed to represent, in their thinking, heaven. They don't want to go to heaven if it's like that. The lost who enter these places are still lost, hating God and church forever, but now with a good reason. Or so they believe. I must say to them, when you get to heaven, you won't be able to offer any reason as to why you turned your back on Jesus. When you get to heaven, but when you stand before the Lord one day, there's no excuses. And I'm not trying to make excuses for you. But I am saying to God's people, y'all better watch out how you treat young people. You don't want to be the reason that they live in eternity in hell, lost forever. You don't want to be the reason for that. And I got a feeling that some of these so-called Christian homes, well, I don't need to finish that sentence, do I? We'll talk about self-regulation of the church next time. We're going to talk also about a book that was written to supposedly give you tips on how to have a Christian home, how to raise kids the right way. Oh, my. I don't even want to go there, but I got to tell you about this book, because it's typical of the kinds of books that some churches are advocating. It's not based on God's word, to my knowledge, at all. Well, that's all for this time. I hope you'll look around the website and enjoy it as you do. There's so much on there that could really be a blessing to you. And this is the Hackberry House of Chosun. Lord willing, we will talk very soon. Bye-bye.